Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-656-5993. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-656-5993. That was 1-800-656-5993. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-656-5993. Shipping and handling not included.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Parkin of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination. Alexis Park Inn.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody's having a great day, a great afternoon, great morning, great evening. It's been a weird, strange day around the planet today, from what I hear. Been a lot of strange stuff going on. Tonight, Marshall Van Summers is going to be our guest. He'll be on in a little while. Treese will be doing a news segment here in just a few seconds for y'all. I got to weigh in on this Pluto argument before I turn the news over to Treese. This is making me crazy, y'all. Look, everybody just vote and get it over with, okay? I'd personally like to know, so why don't you write me at icarcoxon.net, because I want to know what everybody's thinking about this. Personally, I don't really care. Pluto, planet, not planet, it really doesn't matter that much to me. It is kind of small to be a planet. I know it's got some sentimental value from some reason. Why don't we just make it Planet X again and everybody be that much happier? But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, I'm going to be turning you over to Treese with the news. So, Treese, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you, sir. Good evening, Joe and everyone. Treese from Massachusetts. This news segment focuses on three subjects. One, NASA's contract award to Lockheed Martin on the Orion crew exploration vehicle, the successor to the space shuttle. Both you, Joe, and our ICAR West Virginia State Director Joyce mentioned this project in recent news segments on Wake Up USA. Two, the dynamic growth of the Mexican ufology and ET research community. Three, a review of a remarkable document, the Declaration of Human Sovereignty. First, on the $3.9 billion Orion Award to Lockheed Martin Space Systems Company, the Denver Post, through its business section articles by Kelly Yamanuchi, Katie Heumann, and Andy Wong, gives us the details of the deal. The Orion Crew Exploration Vehicle, or Orion CEV, will transport astronauts to the International Space Station, the Moon, and quite possibly to Mars. 2014 represents the projected date for the first astronaut's flight on the new Orion CEV, with 2020 anticipated as the year of the first Orion lunar flight. The Denver Post noted that the El Segundo, California-based team of Northrop Grumman Corp. and Boeing Company had unsuccessfully competed for the Orion contract, despite Northrop Grumman's and Boeing's extensive experience with the space shuttle. Lockheed Martin's team, based in Jefferson County, Colorado, received the contract award, but the main office for the Orion program will be located in Houston, Texas. Nonetheless, it is projected that Colorado could receive more than $500 million through economic benefits during the next seven-year period of NASA's program to design and build the craft, including up to 450 new jobs, primarily in engineering, at Lockheed's Colorado facilities. Also, the director of Orion Business Development noted that an additional $4.25 billion in contract options remains possible through 2019 for craft orders and engineering services. This new generation of Orion human space exploration craft has a capsule shape we're calling the Apollo craft. The Orion vehicle, with two circular solar wings on each side, will feature a reusable capsule-shaped craft composed of four parts: the crew module, the service module for power purposes, the launch abort system to address emergencies, and the connector to attach the craft to the rocket, which launches the entire Orion craft into space. As noted, the main Orion project office will be based in Houston. However, at a site in the New Orleans area, the NASA Michoud, the NASA Michoud Assembly Facility, the large structures and craft composites for the Orion will be built. A Saturday editorial in the Times-Picayune noted that the New Orleans area would receive an initial $3.9 billion investment in the local economy. NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida will serve as a site for final assembly and testing of the craft and its components. A Houston Chronicle article by Seth Borenstein also confirms that the majority of the Orion project work will occur in Houston, the location of the Johnson Space Center, with all 10 NASA centers providing engineering support. The Houston Chronicle relayed estimates from a Lockheed spokeswoman that more than 1,200 jobs will be created from the Orion project, approximately 1,200 positions in Houston, 600 in Colorado, 200 jobs in Louisiana, and 300 in Florida. The Houston Chronicle mentioned that the Orion falls within the space exploration program named Constellation, including the Ares 1 and 5 rockets to propel the Orion and its cargo vehicle. The next news topic relates to the continued expansion of the Mexican UFO ET research community. At the Denver 37th Annual International Symposium, Rubén Uriarte, in his presentation, Border Crossings of the Third Kind, detailed evidence of growing Hispanic community interest in UFO ET phenomena, with one indicator, an exponential growth of UFO ET references in Hispanic commercials. Mr. Uriarte informed us of the creation of a Mexican coalition of research organizations, the Organización Mexicana de Investigadores del Fenómeno OVNI, or OMIFO. The new OMIFO website, most impressive, can be found at www.omifo.foros.org. It notes that the first National UFO Congress, El Primer Congreso Nacional del Fenómeno OVNI, will occur in Chihuahua, Mexico, this October 28th and 29th, on the campus of a leading Mexican university, the Universidad Autónoma de Chihuahua. I would like to mention now three of the presenters at this Mexican conference, who also will be speaking at this weekend's 8th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo at the Hyatt Regency Hotel, Santa Clara, California. This Bay Area UFO Expo will feature 22 speakers. At the Santa Clara conference, Rubén Uriarte, MUFON director for Northern California, will focus on a Washington and Oregon border daylight elk abduction case. At the Mexican conference, Mr. Uriarte will speak on Californian UFO sightings. The research director for OMIFO, Geronimo Flores, will be focusing both at the Bayside UFO Expo and at the October Mexican conference on paranormal aspects of the phenomenon. An interview with Mr. Flores, found at the OMIFO site, notes his opinion that three essentials are required for the successful UFO researcher: luck, intuition, and ethics. Further, Mr. Flores recommends it's necessary for successful research efforts by a UFO phenomena or paranormal investigator, the steps of planning, organization, observation, and conclusion, with all these aspects guided by logic and intuition. Victor Camacho, subdirector of the MIFO and director of the radio program Los Esperados, will, at the October Mexican conference, make a presentation entitled Ataque de OVNIs on AWA. I think his presentation this next weekend in Santa Clara will focus on the same topic, which sounds intriguing if ominous. Ahora, quisiera invitarles a todos nuestros oyentes hispanos a visitar nuestro website www.icar1.com. ICAR significa la Comunidad Internacional para la Investigación de Extraterrestres. Los miembros e investigadores de ICAR se interesan sobre todos los aspectos de esos fenómenos. The final news item I would like to mention is a remarkable document, the Declaration of Human Sovereignty, developed by the Human Sovereignty Workshop Group, which group is linked with tonight's guest speaker, Marshall Vian Summers. I remember that two dear friends of mine at the 2005 X Conference made certain that I received one of the distributed copies of this document. The Declaration of Human Sovereignty's format reflects that of our Declaration of Independence, but addresses major concerns currently discussed in the UFO ET community. The Declaration, found at www.humansovereignty.org, is addressed to all races in the greater community of the universe. This document's segments include the assertion of fundamental rights for Earth's inhabitants, an assessment of the current situation of ET violations against Earth, and demands and declarations regarding disclosure, nullifying or violative agreements, past or present, with ET, transparency for future agreements, return of kidnapped abductees, and making whole any contactees harmed by ET intervention and intrusion. The Declaration's list of fundamental rights include the right of sovereignty of Earth's people, the right of planetary sanctuary to ensure that Earth is, quote, free from extraterrestrial intervention, intrusion, interference, or exploitation, both mental and physical, end quote. Additional rights include the sanctity of biological and genetic material with the ban on the manipulation of, quote, human, biological, or genetic material for any purpose whatsoever, end quote. Other core rights encompass Earth's inhabitants' right of occupation of our solar system and the right of peaceful navigation within our solar system. This evening's guest, Marshall Vian Summers, received a standing ovation at this summer's Denver MUFON Symposium after his presentation on alien objectives and the ethics of contact. Tonight we're certain to hear more details of Mr. Summers' message from the Allies of Humanity, purported benevolent extraterrestrials, as to the dangers of an ongoing collective ET intrusion to sabotage Earth's freedom through deception and manipulation. Mr. Summers also notes in his Allies of Humanity's material an inner spiritual knowledge open to humanity, which knowledge the collective aliens cannot access. This spiritual knowledge is discussed at the Allies of Humanity website at www.alliesofhumanity.org and extensively described at the site of the Greater Community Way of Knowledge at www.greatercommunity.org. Finally, I would like to mention that the Times-Picayune newspaper mentioned during the Orion Contract Award segment featured a few years back a wonderful interview with Joe and Linda Montaldo of ICAR. Also, again, I very much look forward to hearing this evening's guest. Good night.
Thank you very much, Therese from Mass, ladies and gentlemen. She always does a great job doing the news. I want to tell her thanks again for that. I enjoyed it. A couple of things in there I found interesting. You know, just so much going on in the world. And by the way, there's actually several coalitions, I should say, in the South American, well, I should just say in the Latino countries and leave it at that. But ICAR is actually a working member of at least two of them now. We are working with Hami Masson now, so, you know, we try to keep our fingers into everything. It's easier that way. Besides that, it helps to get information that may be breaking news or things like that, things that we're interested in. We're always looking, hunting, tracking, chasing, whatever we can get our fingers on. And these days, it's a lot. Even though, in general, I would have to say overall reporting, both in abductions and in sighting cases, are down somewhat.
I wouldn't say down a lot. I would just say down somewhat. They seem to be down from last year. I'd say down about 20-25%. They had actually dipped a little bit lower than that, but since then seem to have picked up quite easily. Quite good since then. And they seem to be on a steady increase, but still nowhere near the numbers we were seeing 2 years ago and 3 years ago, both in contactees and UFO sightings. Part of that, I really think, the reason we had such a big influx was right after 9-1-1, especially with UFO sightings. They seemed to increase exponentially because so many more people were actually looking in the sky and paying attention to what was going on. As far as abductions, that's anyone's guess. But that's something we'll save for another show. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff told me we have our guest in the queue. So, Marshall, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marshall Van Summers, wanted to introduce you. Let me get you to do this, Marshall. Let me get you to tell me a little bit about yourself, what got you started in this, and we'll start the interview from there.
Okay, very good. Well, in 1976, I left my job as a special educator for the blind and began to explore the ramifications and the implications of what human intuition could actually do if it was taken to a much higher level. And my own exploration of that, plus my teaching of that, the methods that I taught at that time in the 70s, began to open me up to a whole other panorama. And in 1983, I began to receive information about the future of humanity, humanity's future in space, the future of the planet itself, that was unlike anything I had ever read or heard before. And this was coming through my own inner guidance experience. And that prepared me to receive, many years later, in 1997, the Allies of Humanity briefings, which I hope we'll be able to talk about tonight. The briefings actually were also unlike anything I had ever read or heard before. And they began to give me a window into the reality of intelligent life beyond our world and the nature of the extraterrestrial presence in our world today in a very unusual way. And so, In a nutshell, I'm, of course, omitting a lot of important details along the way, but my foundation was as a spiritual teacher, and I came to the whole extraterrestrial question from a spiritual perspective, looking at its implications for our spiritual understanding, our spiritual experience, and for the nature of human understanding in the world today. And the Allies briefings, as I will hope to explain as we go along, was a real shock to me in terms of what it revealed to me about the nature and purpose of the extraterrestrial presence. And so that's how I came to this whole subject, and actually after the Allies briefings were received by me, then I began to study the UFO phenomenon very seriously. And that came after the briefings were received, and that began to really, I began to make some big connections there to see what people have done in terms of research, which has been very extensive, of course, into the whole abduction experience, which I know is a subject, a main theme on your program. And so hopefully we can talk about that tonight as well.
I'm sure we can touch on all of that. Actually, first off, you know, let's back up a little bit from what you were saying. Explain Allies to me. I'm curious into what are we referring to Allies and how did you come to this term?
The Allies describe themselves as several different races or a consortium of races living within our local universe, relatively near the Earth, who are concerned about the future of humanity and the extraterrestrial influence on humanity as how it may affect, should I say, our galactic neighborhood. They describe themselves as the Allies of Humanity in the sense that they are providing information to us that we would not be able to get otherwise about the nature and interactions of intelligent life beyond the boundaries of our world. And they have sent several individuals to act as witnesses or spies, if you will, to witness the extraterrestrial presence in the world today, its purpose, its intentions, its methods, and so forth, and to provide a report in the form of a set of two series of briefings to educate us about the nature of this extraterrestrial presence, what it portends for our world, why it is occurring, what empowers it, what restrains it, what it means for us in terms of our spiritual understanding, as well as our survival and advancement as a race within a greater community of intelligent life. The briefings came to me, really, it was all set up through a spiritual connection. that asked me to receive these briefings. At first, I was very reluctant to do so. I didn't really want to get into the UFO extraterrestrial arena at that time. But like many of us, I came into that arena because it's an important place to be, and I have a certain destiny here, as do I'm sure many of your listeners.
Oh, yeah, they can understand that.
Yes. The Allies briefings, though, people often ask me, well, what was it like to receive these briefings? And it was a very different experience than receiving the angelic presence, which is a very consuming, overwhelming, overshadowing kind of presence. The Allies connection, the experience of that for me was much more like a very distant and weak radio signal, like if you're having a conversation with someone on the far side of the world and you had a very weak signal. So it was clear to me that I was speaking to someone or hearing someone that was at a very great distance from the Earth and that was attempting to communicate. And so I did, after some initial reluctance, I did receive that communication, and that began the transmission of the two sets of Allies to Humanity briefings. The first set of briefings, six briefings, were delivered between 1997 and 1998, and the second set of briefings, all six briefings, were delivered in 24 hours in December of the year 2000. And so the Allies briefings, when they became into publication, they were added along with my other books. I have several award-winning books on greater community spirituality, steps to knowledge, the development of a profound kind of inner guidance experience. And so here I have all of a sudden within this compendium of spiritual teaching, this really potent, very pragmatic, very grounded approach to looking and dealing with the extraterrestrial presence in the world today and humanity's future in space.
Mm. Man, the humanity's future in space, that's another thing that worries a thing like that.
But we're standing at the threshold, as I'm sure you're aware, and as many of your listeners I'm sure are aware.
Oh, sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. That was weird. My phone hiccuped there. Sorry about that, guys and girls. I don't know what happened there. The space thing worries me as much as anything else does. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, have you seen these aliens? I'm just curious because I'm trying to get a description here. And I ask this to everybody who comes on the show that's had any kind of contact or dealing with what I'd like to consider extraterrestrials.
Never a personal encounter. In fact, these beings are not visitors to our world. They are observing our world from a nearby position, at least in the first set of briefings they were. I've had no direct contact with them. But the communication I received was so remarkably clear and so compelling. And as I've seen subsequently after, you know, reading a great deal of UFO literature, so absolutely central to our understanding of this phenomenon. So without that personal contact, this was a message, like a message in a bottle. And I received it, and I brought it into publication in its pure form. And it's both series of briefings are now internationally distributed in a book form.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of times we consider that to be like downloads because several contactees, and I really couldn't get into the details on how many non-contactees actually have the experience, but contactees seem to have what they like to call downloads, for lack of a better way of explaining it. It just seems that they get downloads of information pertaining to usually anything from what the aliens may actually be doing as far as the alien agenda goes to things like Earth changes. I've never really heard anything political other than the fact that they don't really like our politicians. Otherwise, now I can't say that I've heard anything that I would consider to be political.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're not involved, doesn't mean they're not watching. It just doesn't seem to come up much in the topic line. But I ask because there seems to be, well, I'm sure you're aware of this, there seems to be one agenda, but then there seems to be multiple agendas as well.
Sure.
Because we have at least three documented types of aliens abducting people. We can say four, really, that have been well documented now that are picking up people. It's split because you get split reviews on them. You get some of them say that they have this sincere sense that they're here to help us, to help man make it through its adolescent stage, so to say. Other ones are here saying they're strictly here for their own personal agenda. We may be part of it, but it's not really about us. And then there are the few that say, hey, look, guys, you know, they're here to pretty much put a kibosh on everything. All of these explanations for me are hard to swallow because first, You know, I'm a student of ancient history, so knowing this started many, many, many thousands of years ago makes it hard for me to think that, well, if they're here to help us, hell, they could have done that thousands of years ago. If they were here to wipe us out, they could have done that thousands of years ago. Now, if they're here to observe and maybe guide us as we evolve naturally, that might be different. But then that wouldn't go along with what the ancients say. I don't know. It gets real confusing when you start introducing modern-day ufology into the ancient belief system and the ancient everything that was written in the ancient times. It kind of has a weird congealing effect, and it's nice that you can document it back that far, though. I mean, it's really nice that we have sighting cases back. We have even abduction cases listed. And something else I find interesting is there's several cases like this. One the Spartans had written about where they were, I forgot what city it was they were trying to get into, and they had been sieging the city for 3 days. Went out of the blue, this silver shield appeared. They gave a really pretty good description of the shield. A blue light came out of it, blew the gates off the city, and they rolled in and took it over. And it's written in several places in history, so you know it's a story that, I want to say a true story, but I don't know how true it actually is, but enough people were there that it was repeated to several places around the planet, which gives it some credibility. And we do know that most things today are rooted in some kind of fact, you know. I mean, really, true. Usually when you trace back a legend or a story, you find some basis of fact for it. Usually not much, but it's there. But, I mean, you get the general sense that they really are here to kind of guide us. Well, let me let you answer that. It'd be better for you. Go ahead.
Well, clearly we're talking about a phenomenon that has been going on for a long time. But what the Allied briefings reveal that I think is pretty startling is that the intervention that we're experiencing today, and they call it an intervention and not a visitation, has an intervention such as we're experiencing has never occurred in the world before. And the reason has not occurred in the world before is because humanity has not been at a level of technological and social development where such an intervention would be attempted. And I don't use the word intervention in a positive sense here. While there's been visitations to our world for centuries and millennia, while there's been contact with individuals, perhaps, from many different groups who have taken an interest in our world, we have reached a kind of threshold now where we can actually become useful to other races. And I don't mean useful in a positive sense necessarily here.
Yeah.
I think that we have to follow our own evolution. And clearly, an evolution from, say, 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, I mean, we're in a very different situation as the native peoples of this world. We have a very different relationship with our home planet, in some ways better, in some ways worse. But it puts us in a very different position regarding our relationship with other races in our vicinity or other races or groups of races that have an interest in our world. And the briefings tell us that the intervention has many faces, and even those groups who are here are actually multiracial. And so we're encountering many different kinds of races, people's direct encounters. We're seeing many different kinds of craft. It's not just one group, it's many groups. One of the things that the Allied briefings gives us in terms of clarification is that though there are many groups here, they are basically all here for the same purpose. And that those who are real allies are not interfering in human affairs. They're not trying to manipulate us genetically, socially, politically. All they can do, in the wisest sense, is to provide us whatever perspective or information we need that we, still being grounded on the planet of our world, still unable to go into space, cannot see for ourselves. And so there's an important point of clarification that the Allies say they are not here. They are not visiting. They are not interfering in human affairs. They are not taking people against their will. They're not trying to establish a political presence. They're not trying to direct or determine, you know, the nature of humanity's development at any level, except to provide us some core wisdom that we, as a young and inexperienced race within this greater community of intelligent life in which we live, will need to know in order to maintain our freedom and sovereignty in this world and to have some kind of foundation upon which to establish our own ethics of contact. It has not been established thus far.
Well, not from our side. No, I would agree with that. I mean,
We have no say in what is being done to us or to our world. And this is one of the key points that I really like to stress, is that we are the native peoples of this world. And if we are to learn from both history and nature, we have to look at the history of intervention for Native peoples historically throughout the world. And one of the lessons of intervention, the lessons of nature, is that interventions are always carried out for self-interest.
Oh, yeah.
There may be some secondary plan to enlighten or redeem or lead the natives to salvation, but the primary motive is economic. The primary motive is prosaic. It's not mystical. It's not about, you know, that we are such a grand race in the universe that other races adore us or study us or want to learn from us or need to learn how to raise children from us. This is just silliness. I mean, back to a foundation, the starting point, that we are the native peoples of this world. How are we going to respond to visitations or interventions, especially in a situation where we have absolutely no say or no given no authority to grant permission for anyone to be here or to determine the nature of that visitation when it does occur? So I'd like to tell people or recommend that instead of approaching the extraterrestrial presence as scientists or philosophers or theologians, we have to start at the very beginning. And the very beginning is we're the native peoples of this world. This is our home planet of origin. How are we going to deal with visitations and interventions?
Oh, I agree. But, Marshall, let me stop you right there because we've got to go to break right quick. Everyone, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Marshall Summers, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some questions. So please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Kent Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right. You heard free. And we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-656-5993. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-656-5993. That was 1-800-656-5993. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-656-5993. Shipping and handling not included.
Alexa Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination. Alexis Park Inn.
SRN.
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live to SRN, 1690 Riverside, Iowa. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope everybody's enjoying the show tonight. I'm sitting and speaking with Marshall Van Summers tonight. It's been very interesting so far. I know what we were discussing at the break, y'all should love, because it's right up everybody's alley. You know, Marshall, a couple of things that interest me about all of this. First off, I do agree with the ethics. I think that we should be the one dictating the ethics of contact and things like that. I don't know if we're going to actually get that far yet, but it is something I agree. But let me ask you this. What do you consider, what would you consider to be an ethical contact?
Well, clearly an ethical contact is a contact that is allowed and stipulated by the host. I mean, if you think of ethical contact in terms of some entering your home, you just don't have people creeping around in the back rooms of your house, unacknowledged, acting surreptitiously. Most people wouldn't allow that to happen. So I think if you consider what you would allow within your own home in terms of visitation, that begins to give us a kind of a basis for allowing visitation to this world. We need to know who is coming, why they want to come, what they intend to do here. There could be no secrecy, and we hold the right to say yes, you can come, or no, you can't come. But clearly, in the whole UFO phenomenon, these rights have never been recognized. Most people who are interested in the subject, frankly, don't even think about these things very much. And clearly, it's our responsibility, as the native peoples of this world, as people witnessing visitation, intervention in our native land, must begin to establish some kind of ethics of contact. In fact, there's a very important document called the Declaration of Human Sovereignty. It can be viewed at www.humansovereignty.org that begins to model or to set out some basic ethics of contact, and it's a fabulous document to read. I had a small part in crafting it. It's fashioned after the Declaration of Independence, the United States. It's a beautiful document, and it's very thought-provoking because it establishes us as the native peoples who have rights and responsibilities and a certain amount of authority to extend. And unfortunately, many people feel that this extraterrestrial presence is so advanced and so overwhelming that we have no rights, we have no power. And unfortunately, this is some of the manipulation, the result of manipulation, pacification, it has been conducted by the extraterrestrial presence over the last 50 years in particular, at least those races who are here to exploit the world for its resources. And unfortunately, you know, when I've gone and spoken at UFO symposia or have been a participant at UFO symposia, there's all this, you know, rancor about the government and government cover-up, certainly very deserving, but no one's asking about the extraterrestrial. No one's questioning the extraterrestrial. It's assumed that the extraterrestrial is benign or beneficial or good or neutral, and no one's looking there, or very few people are looking there. And I feel that's the most important place to look. In a way, our government's a small player in this. And the power is with the people here, because the government is not going to reveal what it knows. And if it does reveal it, it probably wouldn't be trustworthy anyway. So here we are, witnessing the intervention, experiencing at many different levels, whether direct sightings, encounters, or receiving, you know, imagery, or, you know, happening on a psychic level, whatever level it may be affecting us or influencing us, we are the witnesses to the most profound event in human history, and yet we're not questioning it. I know, I'm sure you are, and probably many of your listeners are, but most people who are interested in this subject really are not asking the most important questions, in my view. They have hopeful expectations. They're looking to be saved. They want a higher intelligence, a more advanced race to come and kind of clean up the world for us. And if we look at the lessons of intervention from our own history and from nature itself, that's never what happens. And if that were the case, if this was an exception to all that nature and history has taught us, if this is an exception, then it would have to be, we would have to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the extraterrestrial presence was here to help us. And that would have to be demonstrated without, beyond a shadow of a doubt, rather than just being hopeful or believing or wanting to be saved by extraterrestrial beings.
I agree with that. They would have to prove it to me beyond any reasonable doubt in my mind.
Really, that's never been proved to anybody. I can't imagine any reasonable person being able to say, yes, this has been proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Because we can't make a mistake here. As the native peoples of the world, we cannot make a mistake here. Because truly, our world could be lost without firing a shot.
Yeah, at the rate we're going, I don't know, you know, we do teach, one of the things we do teach contactees is to question their experience. We actually teach them, we even go as far as helping them program in questions because we know most contact is telepathic. And we do know that the aliens do tend to respond almost out of instinct when a question is put to them in a telepathic form. So it is something we do teach contactees, and it is interesting. You do get some information and things like that, some of which is disturbing, some of which isn't, but some of it which is. But I agree. I mean, I think there should be some type of some way. Before I go any further, let me ask you something. How long ago did you release this book? I'm just curious because, you know, I'm listening to you speak, and I kind of got exopolitics in the back of my head, which this sounds similar to, but not the same, because actually you realize that the contact experience is going on. And the way lately I've been hearing exopolitics being presented is that we haven't had contact yet, and we're trying to set up rules of contact and engagement. And so it almost sounds like someone had taken what you'd said at an earlier time and kind of changed it a little bit and came up with that. But I was just curious, I mean, how long has it been since you actually released this to the general public?
I believe the first Allied set of briefings came out in 1999, in the year 2000, and the second set of briefings came out in 2004.
And were you speaking about this before you released the book? I'm just curious. I mean, these kind of things are little things that bug me.
Actually, I was, to a certain extent. I was talking about preparing for life in what I call the greater community, which is the greater community of intelligent life in the universe, spiritual preparation for contact, spiritual preparation for a future in a universe full of intelligent life, that intelligent life is prevalent throughout the universe. We have our destiny is there, our future is there, our success will be there, our failure will be there. And I'm treating this in most of my writings in a much more theological context. Then along comes these briefings, which treat it in the most mundane. In fact, there's nothing airy-fairy about the Allies of Humanity briefings. There's nothing mushy or gushy about it whatsoever. In fact, it's extremely succinct. It's brutally honest. And I think it clears the picture remarkably and certainly begins to add some of the missing pieces that, as I mentioned before, being stuck here on the surface of our world, we just cannot know certain things about the nature and interactions of intelligent life. So we're kind of acting the way that native peoples have always responded, or many have responded, to first encounters, visitations, interventions. We're treating this romantically. We're treating this idealistically. We're treating this as a form of possible salvation, or we think, as many native peoples in the Americas did, that the visitors were from the spirit world. You know, they couldn't conceive of another race coming across the ocean, so they thought their visitors were emissaries from the spirit world. And even today, there are many psychics and people in New Age thinking who think that extraterrestrials are spiritual emissaries from the spirit world, or have that they're indistinguishable from angels, or have special relationship with angelic beings. And there's really no reality there at all. I mean, this is just pure projection, and we need to treat this in the most fundamental and elemental way we can. We can speculate about its spiritual implications and its religious meaning, but before we do that, we have to view this as visitation intervention. We as the native peoples have no power, have no authority, cannot determine the nature of this intervention, what it's doing. It's hidden from us. It has some very dark sides to it. Sometimes it appears to be beneficial. Certainly the abduction phenomenon is extremely dark. I mean, if we really look at people's lives being so dramatically altered by this experience to the point where many of these people break down psychologically. They can't function in society. They're being prepared. They're being their minds are being controlled. It's a very dark thing. And one abductee told me that, you know, to them we're nothing more than cockroaches. Well, we're like cattle. The Allies briefings say to the intervention, those who are intervening in the world today, you're like cattle. You're like intelligent cattle. You're interesting, but you're only valued in terms of your usefulness. And the definition of usefulness, particularly in the second set of briefings, is very dramatically portrayed. And I think it throws us back in a really sobering manner, because we don't think of ourselves as the native peoples of the world. We don't think of visitation in anything but a highly speculative or romantic or beneficial realm, because that's what we all want. We'd love to have a race come and bestow upon us advanced technology and teach us all how to live in peace and harmony. But that just doesn't happen in life, and that's just the intervention of
sound. Wow. What was that?
Sorry?
Hello?
Still here.
Oh, okay. That was just weird. I just heard something real weird sound come shooting.
Oh, quick.
That was... That was strange. Every now and then I get to hear something weird. I don't know what that is. Didn't mean to distract you, because I liked the way you were going with this. And all of this kind of fascinates me, because, I mean, one of the things that we gripe, complain, and preach the most is stand up and be counted. And really, especially when it comes to contactees. Now, I know Darryl Sim says he can stop his contact through whatever means, and him and I differ on this particular matter. But we do agree on that you don't have to go as sheep to the slaughter either. And there are certain things that you can do to at least change the contact experience. And these days, I don't worry so much about the contactees as I do about the people who are being abducted that have no idea and totally and absolutely against their will. Because at least when you become a contactee, you are aware of it. And a lot of them seem to kind of even embrace these contacts as time progresses. But for the abductees, they don't. I don't know. It's a very strange thing, and there seems to be several multiple layers of things going on with one long-term goal that they're trying to achieve. But, I mean, is that basically how it is for you, or is it different?
Well, let me, if I may, just read a couple of passages from the Allies briefings, because passages, I think, are very revealing. Regarding abductions, this is a quote from the third briefing in the first book of the Allies of Humanity. Quote, clearly, an interbreeding program is an attempt to fuse humanity's adaptation to the physical world with the visitor's group mind and collective consciousness. Such offspring would be in a perfect position to provide the new leadership for humanity, a leadership that is born of the visitor's intentions and the visitor's campaign.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and in the second briefing in the first book, quote, the interbreeding program has only one purpose, and that is to enable the visitors to establish a presence and a commanding influence within the world. Now, unquote. Now, to understand this, there's a few things I should add, because this is taken out of context. It's important to understand that the visitors can't live here, that they exist in a sterile environment. If you live in a sterile environment, even if you have advanced medical technology, you cannot walk into a world like this with millions of biological agents and influences. If you want to be able to have a presence here, and you're going to have to create a hybrid person, because you yourself cannot stand the biological impact. Just as you and I, if we walked into certain parts of the African bush, wouldn't be able to survive the biological agents that we encountered there. And we're natives of this. This is our own world. So you can imagine someone from another world who lives in a sterile environment coming into a world of such biological diversity probably could not survive here even if they could breathe our atmosphere. So the purpose of an interbreeding program then is to establish, I'm not just talking about the people who are abducted. I'm talking about their offspring. People abducted can become apologists for the intervention, can become even representatives of the intervention, or they just may be used as fodder, genetic fodder. But it's their offspring. And the cultivation of this offspring, and we're talking about something very dark here, the cultivation of this offspring who is aligned, has total allegiance to the intervention, the extraterrestrial intervention, but can function as a human being with enhanced abilities and can walk among us unrecognized unless you're very psychically sensitive. That's a very chilling thing, and yet the intervention itself, and I should preface this, the intervention itself is not a military presence, it's a commercial presence. It doesn't have an armada of ships waiting to destroy us. It's a very small group of exploratory nations who are using primarily mind control and influence and taking advantage, of course, of our ignorance and our superstitions to gain influence here and to gain ascendancy here. And so it's a much more subtle kind of form of persuasion than we're used to, and it's at a far higher level than our advertisers, our marketers, you know, but it follows the same kinds of principles. You make people feel that they cannot survive or cannot progress without the extraterrestrial presence, that humanity is doomed to failure without the extraterrestrial presence and intervention, that human leadership is permanently flawed, human institutions will not be able to sustain us into the future. And if you look at a lot of the channeled extraterrestrial messages and even books that are prevalent today, you'll see this emphasis on human failure and the nobility, the assumed nobility of the extraterrestrial, which has never really been demonstrated aside from advanced technology. And so we're really being cultivated to be acquiescent and accepting to a presence that we know nothing about, to a presence that has never demonstrated its intentions or its purpose clearly and unambiguously to us. A presence that is operating surreptitiously in a very deceptive manner. A presence that is not empowering us to determine the nature of the contact, the rules of engagement, or anything like this. So, and this is why I think the Allies briefings were given, was that we are basically just walking, we're being led to the cliff, and we're being led to a position of acquiescence and submission because our own tendencies are being exploited, our own assumptions are being exploited, our own religions are being exploited, and our conflicts with each other are being exploited. And that's a whole other subject that we can definitely go into, is how human conflict is being nurtured by the intervention itself.
But you know what, Marshall, I think what we'll do is, I know we're starting to stack up questions, and I think we're getting close to the top of the hour break, so let's squeeze in a question. I'm kind of curious to see where the audience is wanting to take this, because, you know, see, you and I could talk all night long, it would be easy, because I could talk to you easy. We're working on the same area, so it's an easy conversation for me, but I do like to see where, because sometimes they have a unique perspective on some, sometimes they have a really weird perspective on things as well, but... Are you ready for some questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's see who we have up first. Let's see, we have Linda keep his hand up first. So Linda, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live in the air with Marshall Summers.
Good afternoon, Mr. Summers. My name is Linda, and I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I was listening to what you were just saying, sort of a bleak outlook for the human race. What I don't understand is, if the aliens have been dealing with us for a long time, then obviously there are many offspring. This genetic, you know, us coming together with them. So are they living on Earth now? Are they in positions of power, or will they all just come later?
Very good question, Linda. First of all, I want to make the important distinction that the abduction program is a very recent phenomenon, and that the groups who are operating here are not the groups that have operated here in the past. These groups are coming here to exploit a humanity that has reached a technological and social level of development that can interface with theirs, perhaps at a lower level that can interface, where such an intervention would not have taken place even 100 years ago because we didn't have international telecommunications, we didn't have international business, we didn't have the kind of international infrastructure that an extraterrestrial race could use or take advantage of. And so the visitations that have occurred throughout history for very different reasons. The Earth, for example, has been used as a place to hide objects for millennia for different races. It's been used for biological resources, to cultivate these resources elsewhere. It's been used for many other purposes. But What we're looking at now, particularly within the last 50 years, is an intervention by commercially oriented forces. They're not military. They're not large in number. And they are seeking here to establish themselves, though they cannot breathe our atmosphere or live on the surface of our world. And that is why the abduction phenomenon is very central to their long-range goals. Clearly, if you want humanity to be acquiescent and subservient, you don't want to try to take them by force, which they're really not equipped to do anyway. I mean, ruling 6.5 billion slightly crazy, insane human beings is a pretty daunting task. But if you set up the right kind of infrastructure, it actually can occur. Now, to go to your question about are there hybrids walking the world, I believe that there are some. I think it has taken several generations to create a hybrid human being that can function in the capacity that the intervention seeks. And the Allies briefings talk about this to some extent. And they also emphasize that the individuals who would assume positions of power will not be the people who are in elected office. They'll be their advisors. It is the individuals who have tremendous leverage and persuasive ability who are not public officials that will have the greatest influence. So people often ask me, well, is the President of the United States an extraterrestrial? Is he a hybrid? And I would say, no, of course not. It's the people he listens to. It's the people who have his ear or the ear of any other government leader or religious leader. That is the most important thing. And again, I think the outlook for humanity, you mentioned it was bleak. I think it is bleak in terms of our own behavior. But we're at a threshold where we could establish, particularly in the face of this intervention, a human level of human unity and cooperation has never been achieved here before. And it wouldn't be achieved out of high moral principles or high idealism. It would be achieved out of necessity. And that necessity would be driven both by the declining resources of our world and by the need to unite in the face of dealing with a universe of intelligent life that looks at our world as like a prize. Because we live in a paradise world in the universe, and we're spoiling it very quickly. And of course it's valuable to other races.
I hope they don't consider Earth to be a paradise. I'm really hoping that there's nicer places out there.
Now, I know people want to think that the pasture is going to be greener, but the briefings reveal that this world is very rare in terms of its biological diversity, and that advanced technological races, almost without exception, with very few exceptions, have depleted their world's natural resources, as we're rapidly doing here, and have really created barren worlds for their home planets, and now have to go out and trade and barter and find those resources elsewhere. And clearly the Allies are warning us not to do that. I mean, the whole notion of resource depletion here is very, very a critical issue in terms of our ability to have power and influence in the future. In the second briefing in the first book of the Allies of Humanity, it says, quote, "If your world loses its self-sufficiency, it will lose much of its freedom. If you must go beyond your world to seek the resources you need to live, then you will lose much of your power to others," unquote.
Yeah, well, if we got to go bartering outside of our own planet, we're going to, and especially if we don't have anything to barter with.
We would go begging, basically. And so this is, again, how native races of people have been overcome. They become dependent to some degree on foreign influence, foreign technology, and then they lose their self-sufficiency and then just become basically consumers at some level. And we're dealing in a universe, and the Allies of Humanity briefings describe our universe as a competitive environment on a scale you can't imagine.
Oh, I can imagine.
I'm not saying that in the negative sense. It's just a pragmatic, it's just a realistic way. You know, Jesus said, as above, so below. I mean, this is life, and that those races that are intervening in our world today are driven by the same needs that drive us.
I have no doubt that some of them are quite greedy. I really don't. Actually, I see quite a few of our characteristics in them.
Yes, we have this notion going around that there's free energy in the universe. And, you know, it's a wonderful idea, and we'd love to believe in it. But these races, they're desperate for resources. And we're living on a paradise world. I mean, a world with this kind of biological diversity, even though we're rapidly despoiling it, is exists in the universe, but it's rare.
I would imagine it's a rare planet. I wouldn't think it was one of
the kind. This is a very special place we live on, and as the stewards of this world, we're operating extremely foolishly regarding it. I mean, we're giving away our future self-sufficiency.
You know,
in terms of our relation with other races in the universe, that's a very important point.
It is. But, you know, sometimes I wonder, because some of the contactees I've talked to, especially with what they would like to call the reptilians, or as the researchers move more as the amphibians, they seem to have a claim to the planet. They say they were here before us, a long, long, long before us, about 180 million years ago.
Part of the deception.
They said they appeared on the planet about 500 million years ago, but
that's right. This
around
Earth.
65.
Like,
so, well, what I was saying is did they leave? They give up right to the planet? I don't know. That's a hard one. That's like saying you own property in California and you moved out to the East Coast, you still own the property. You know, I don't know. That's something I've always wondered about, because it does seem like something that comes up a lot. But anyway, I know we got to go to break. We'll touch on that when we come back from the break, ladies and gentlemen. Meantime, I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo, and I'm sitting and speaking with Marshall Summers, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
SRN 1690,
AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only, and Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network, and if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call.
Hey, over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. So we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
What America needs is affordable health insurance.
Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down, 877-679-7794. That's 877-679-7794. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds, us who run small businesses or don't get where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-679-7794. Not available in all. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door, because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination, Alexis Park Inn.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Balthaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. We're sitting and speaking with Marshall Van Summers tonight on several things, including alien agendas and allies and things like that. So remember, if you'd like to call us direct, you can reach us at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Or you can join us in Pow Talk Virtual Auditorium, whichever way you would like. You know, Marshall, I was thinking, when you're talking about the alien agenda, now you're talking about this is a group that got together and that are working in one area, right? I mean, like different aliens.
There are several groups here competing with each other.
The reason I'm asking is long-term, best-case scenario for man.
Long-term, the best-case scenario is we recognize that we are vulnerable to interventions from the universe around us, and we're also running out of critical resources in our world. And human unity and cooperation isn't just a good idea anymore. It's a real necessity.
Oh, I agree.
In my teaching on greater community spirituality, which emphasizes the one spirituality of humanity, we have to stop this conflict between the world's religions because it could prepare us for the next world war. And
you noticed it. Oh, go ahead.
So the world war is the last thing we need. I mean, we have to begin preserving our resources. We have to establish our own rules of engagement regarding contact with other races, whoever they may be, whatever their intentions may be. We have to sort of grow up in the universe. I mean, we may seem like we're very adult within our own world, but we're acting like adolescents in terms of the greater community of intelligent life. We need to really accelerate our own species maturity, or we're open prey for anyone who wants to come and take advantage of us. We're like your beautiful teenage daughter who's wandering the streets of the big city. I mean, assuming that everyone she meets is a friend we're not acting in a wise, responsible manner, and I think we're really not even using our spiritual power, our spiritual ability to comprehend the bottom line of what we're dealing with. And so I think the promise and the possibility for humanity is we're still a very spiritual people. You know, it's an interesting thing in the Allies briefings. They say that spirituality or spiritual awareness is actually very rare amongst technologically advanced races who become entirely secular. Not all races, certainly, but a majority of them, and that the kind of spirituality that we can still focus on in this world, that we can still explore, is actually pretty rare in the universe. And, of course, this is kind of blows up the notion that, you know, advanced technology is the same as advanced spirituality. Because we even see in our own world, as we become more, you know, dependent upon technology, we're actually becoming more secular. We're looking at technology as our salvation, looking at technology as the source of our power. Technology is the answer to all of our questions, which in fact is creating more problems than it can answer. So,
I agree. But, you know, technology is a good kind of uses just like everything else does. It's just you can't rely on it for everything.
It's not going to solve all our problems, clearly.
Well, it's like the computer boom, you know, especially in the more modern parts of the planet. There's a lot of people get on their computer, stay on their computer. I'm guilty of it myself. I spend a lot of time on my computer. We get used to it. We started using our technologies, and we just have to remember they're not a replacement. They're a tool. You know, they're not here to run our lives or to guide our lives. They're just a tool to make our lives easier. But I think we forget that sometimes, and we look for them for answers. We do look, a lot of people do look towards technology to answer things. I notice we like nanite technology. It's a really good idea when it's finally mastered. It's going to be a fantastic way to increase the longevity of man and keep people healthier. But, you know, meanwhile, it's like the rainforest. There are so many cures probably sitting on a leaf in the rainforest that it's not even funny. And we haven't even tapped that potential yet. We're looking for nanites to save us when
there may be a much easier and much less much more inexpensive way, but no, that's not humanity. I think we like to do things the hard way, Marshall. I really do. Sometimes I wonder about us as a species because we do seem to like to always take the hard road. Even though when there's an easy road laid out as a species, we tend to take the hard road. And you'll hear me gripe and complain all the time. You know, I tell people all the time, stop referring to yourselves as Americans or Chinese or Russian and start referring to yourselves as Terrans or Earthlings or whatever the hell you want to call yourself. But that's something I've been saying for years. Whether or not we're going to ever see that, it's not that good of a chance in our lifetimes that we'll see it.
It's interesting that you're saying this because, you know, when people hear my presentation about the intervention and the Allies briefings, I mean, it can look very dark, but it really has within it the seed of the greatest possibility for humanity, because the thing that will unite us isn't because we all agree about God or religion or food or culture. We're going to unite because we have to unite, because if we don't unite, we're going to fail. I think and I'm speaking of this from the standpoint of being a spiritual teacher, who I would love to see us unite for higher principles and for greater truth. But I think the thing that is really going to get people to change the way they look at themselves and the world and how they operate in the world, how we all operate in the world, is necessity. And necessity is the mother of invention. And the intervention is a necessity. And we're still romancing it. We're still treating it like it's an exploration in consciousness, or it's a science project, or it's the grooviest thing. It's another groovy thing that's going on in the world. It's entertainment. And I don't treat it as entertainment. I look at it as a native person of this world looking at the tall ships out on the ocean, and I'm saying, what is this going to mean for me in my life, and what do I need to know about those tall ships, and what do I need to know if I was in those tall ships, why would I be coming to this shore?
And there's a lot we need to know about this. I mean, let's be honest about it. As researchers, we may have more information than the general public does, granted, but they're the ones that really need to know. And most of what we do these days is about education. I really thought it was going to be about proving the existence of aliens, but it really turns out that these days we're more into educating people that this is a real phenomenon, there is something happening to these people. We don't even try to convince them it's aliens anymore. We let the research speak for itself. And that tends to do the job really well these days. But, you know, Marshall, I know I've been hogging you, and I know I'm getting IMs all over the place about questions. You ready for some more questions?
Certainly.
All right, who we got up next? Let's see, TRMT 137. Why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live in the air with Marshall Summers.
Hello, gentlemen. Wonderful program. Mr. Summers, you speak of the greater community observing whether humanity accepts the intervention of the collective ETs. Would major endorsement of the Declaration of Human Sovereignty be considered by the greater community in the universe at large as compelling evidence that Earth inhabitants object to the collective ET intrusion? And towards that end, sir, could you see this document in the future being the subject of a global petition to seek UN endorsement of its provisions? Thank you for your response.
That's a very good question. We're talking about the Declaration of Human Sovereignty as a document which can be viewed at www.humansovereignty.org. I think it is, we need to have some kind of voice communicating out into the universe, telling whoever's watching us, whoever is watching the intervention, that we don't approve of visitation when we, in a situation where we do not establish the rules of engagement or the rules of contact. And otherwise, it appears to anyone who's observing this, any forces that are restraining the intervention, for example, which the briefings do talk about in some detail, it just looks like we're accepting this presence. We're not resisting it. We're not speaking out against it, and I think we do need to speak out against it because it's fundamentally unethical, and that the Declaration of Human Sovereignty most certainly could go before the UN. It is a statement of human rights, of human responsibilities. I think anyone who understands that they have rights and responsibilities could read this document and certainly accept it. It's, we're talking about collective rights as the native peoples of this world, our planet of origin. And I think it's a very ethical document. It is very specific. It probably needs further evolution, further work, further expansion. It doesn't cover every question that we might have, but it's a very good starting point. It's a place to begin, and I just encourage all the listeners of the show to go and read this document. It's just there online. You can read it. You could contact our office and school here in Boulder, Colorado at www.greatercommunity.org. We'd be happy to mail you a printed copy of it. It is a very strong document, as was the Declaration of Independence. It needs to be a strong document. We are the native peoples. We have to lay down some boundaries about what other races can and cannot do within our world. So I do appreciate your question.
You know, I wish I knew you were at the last conference. Actually, we had a couple of ICAR members present there, including the state director for Colorado. Damn, could have ended, had him introduce himself to you. We keep our hands in everything these days, man. But abduction is what we specialize in. Abduction research, contact research, things along those lines, that is what we specialize in. Really and truly, stuff like sightings, we usually refer to someone else unless they're really good, you know, one of those sightings that there was 500 people and lots of videotape, otherwise than that. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I know you've heard me say this a million times on the last Marshall Reed things, but UFOs are all great and dandy, but they don't really help prove anything, and it's pretty much the same thing now. Oh, I got some video footage. It's good footage. It might even make the news. Okay, well, that's the end of it. So, you know, I'm really looking for answers, and I find that most of those answers are coming from the contactees because they're the ones who have having the alien contact experience. You know, they can ask direct questions. They can get direct information. And a lot of them get what we like to call downloads on a regular basis, whereas that every now and then it's kind of like an update for your computer. ET just downloads some information, updates what's in your head, things that you might have been wondering about or things that they might need you to do or work along. What do you think about that, too, Marshall, with contactees working with the extraterrestrials? Do you think that's a good or a bad idea?
I don't think that's a very good idea because unless you really know who you're working with, and of course, the real, you know, by your fruits you shall know them. I mean, the real evidence of this is what's being communicated. I mean, what is being asked of anyone who's receiving these messages?
Well, actually, usually it's not what they're asking. They're usually giving them information with dealing with what's going on, why some of the things are being done the way they are, and some. I got to tell you, most contactees paint a fairly dark future. It's not like, you know, people always take this the wrong way. Everybody always assumes right off the bat this is the end of humanity. That's not the picture they're painting. Just the picture here on planet Earth, I should say, is not a pleasant picture. And really and truly, I do find, from what I hear from a lot of contactees, is that as a species, we play a big role in this, in which direction this final outcome goes. But I agree with Marshall, this is going to have to be a united front. Without a united front, it's not going to happen. Right now, everybody buying for each other's secrets and fighting over trivial stuff. And I hate to say that religion is trivial, but when it comes to the grand scheme of the universe, it is a trivial thing to go killing people over. And everyone should have religious and ethnic, and you should all just, it just should be something built into you. Everyone should have this tolerance. It shouldn't even be a question. It shouldn't matter what anybody else believes. It just shouldn't. You know, you shouldn't even bother yourself with it. But best I can see, we're a good 200-300 years from that attitude. It's just like discrimination, and I figure we're a good 200-300 years from that. But, you know, if something would unite the planet, that would help speed this along quite a long
Well, we're going to have to find a common ground, and that common ground is going to be about resources and about our position in the universe, because we're a highly exploitable world.
Yes.
You have a native race that's very superstitious and very unassuming. You have a native race that whose main endeavor is tribal warfare, who's despoiling a planet of immense value and importance to others.
Marshall, have you ever heard when Reagan gave his little speech about uniting planet Earth?
Famous what-if speech.
Yeah, actually, he said it on six or seven occasions, actually, about... an alien invasion. It would take an alien invasion to unite humanity. Have you ever heard him say that?
Yes, I have. I've heard, of course, the UN speech. I'm not aware of his other references to this. But it's a really standout comment from him. And
you should wonder if he knew or not, huh?
He's serious in presenting it.
Yeah, well, it's the way he said it. It's not just the way he said it. There were several things he did, which I know a lot of people aren't familiar with. One was he instituted Star Wars. If anybody's ever done their homework on Star Wars, you will realize the lasers we were building were much too big for shooting down missiles. These things were more designed to take out something very large. They were very powerful. And that's why they weren't very good at tracking. They were big and bulky and took a lot of energy, but they weren't made to shoot down a little missile coming in over. He also instituted Pine Gap, which is the Joint British Defense of Outer Space, in case y'all didn't know that, which was officially, it said it closed in 2000, but recently they did admit to the fact that it is still up and operating. He instituted both those programs at the same time, both suggesting there was a threat from space. He also mentioned it in his speech. I don't know. He just seems like he knew something that we don't know, or he was privy to some information that made him say, whoa. But we need a little protection on the planet. Because let's be honest, when he instituted Pine Gap, when he instituted Pine Gap, he openly admitted that there was a threat from outer space. He didn't say inner space. He didn't say for defending the planet or the moon. He said the defense of outer space. This is a man who was planning to go to war with something in space, and all his actions dictated that thing. But go ahead, Marshall.
Well, I mean, that's very important what you're saying, and if anyone should know the intentions or the behavior of the extraterrestrials, it would be the inner circles of government, who probably have more contact with the extraterrestrials than anybody else. And, people think that, it's often assumed that, you know, governments are threatened by the power of the extraterrestrials in a competitive sense. I think that it's really important to understand that the people who in government, and of course government's a really big place, and perhaps in the head of corporations, I mean, if they could benefit from the extraterrestrials, they would. They'd be the first to benefit. Advanced technology, my goodness. And the Allied Briefings refers to this as that the leaders of government, industry, religion, will be contacted by the intervention. And certain individuals will be contacted and to create a liaison with them. And certainly what's going to be offered to these individuals is power, technology, predominance, dominion. This is exactly what has happened throughout history in terms of the kind of interventions, particularly the kind of interventions we've seen in the last 100 years, where the intervening force is not a soldier with a sword, but a man in a suit with a cell phone and a briefcase. That you win if you need the natives, and apparently they do need us to work for them. If you need the natives, you win them over by offering them trinkets, offering them power, convincing them that the way they live is inadequate or unhealthy or unholy. And you win them over, and this is just going on, you know, all over the planet. And it has been going on for centuries. And that if you need the natives to work for you, and you want to subjugate them because that's a negative work environment, you want them to submit willingly, which is the most intelligent thing to do, then you win them over. And I think that's exactly what the intervention has been doing. Even as we speak, the intervention has many representatives and apologists and few critics. Very few critics. And they're also taking advantage of humanity's lack of confidence in itself, in its leaders, its institutions. And this is another classic intervention tactic, is to make the natives, you know, have doubt their leaders or their medicine man or whatever, so that it creates a vacuum of confidence. And many of the people who are very pro-intervention will also tell you that, you know, government is evil and institutions don't work and never will work, and we need the extraterrestrial to pull us through. And they're very cynical about humanity's ability and humanity's future. And I personally do not share that cynicism. But I think the impetus for us to take a higher road is going to have to come from our engagement with the life in the universe, and also our engagement with our deeper spiritual reality, which I call knowledge.
The knowledge. You know, I pick on people all the time about things like we're still in the womb. You know, I compare the planet, you know, and our atmosphere to the womb. You know, that's our protective womb, and we're still nurtured inside. And we haven't really, really gone outside the womb. And so I can really consider us still infants. I don't even give us adolescent stage, to be honest with you, mainly because it takes us so long to learn a lesson, like war. I mean, we're not even going to get into how many people we've killed over the centuries, but this should have been an easy lesson to learn. You go to war, people die. Don't seem to learn it. Don't even seem to care for half the population, which scares me. But Jess informed me that we have Therese on the 800 line. Can you hear me, Therese?
Yes, I can, and excuse my calling in with a second question. Mr. Summers, you know that humans possess an inner spiritual ability, a spiritual knowledge which the ET collectives cannot access. What would you say, sir, to those experiencers who have reported accounts of dream tests and downloads of information and who consider such manipulation as invasive rather than instructive or educational? There's a bit of a dichotomy of opinion there. Could the individual who rejected this type of mental download attempt to thwart such collective ET intervention through use of the spiritual knowledge you describe? Thank you for your response.
Go ahead, Marshall.
Beautiful question. Certainly we possess, and this is the importance of talking about this spiritual knowledge, this deeper intelligence that we've all been given, is that it cannot be corrupted, it cannot be influenced. I mean, it's the one thing that's truly reliable. It cannot be subjugated to corporate influence, government influence, extraterrestrial influence. It remains pure within us, pure and powerful. In terms of blocking interference, which is something I've had to learn to do, particularly as I was beginning to receive the Allied briefings. I was getting a lot of mental invasion from other forces trying to thwart this whole experience for me. And there's what I call mental shielding, which is building literally, in a visual sense, a wall between the incoming signal, the penetrating voice or the penetrating intention, to block that. And it's a skill that you have to actually practice and develop, and it can become effective, even though it does take quite a bit of energy to do it. But such kinds of mental intrusion can be blocked in this way because it's happening at the psychic level. At the spiritual level, you can't influence knowledge within people. Knowledge has its own mind, its own will, and its own purpose. It's the voice of conscience within us. It's our heart intelligence. People often think of heart math or, you know, I'm connected to my heart, what my gut says. And this is kind of a fundamental, rudimentary way of looking at knowledge, but knowledge is actually a deeper mind within us, the mind that the creator of all life has given us to guide and protect us. And so one of the key elements in preparing for life in the greater community, preparing to deal with a world in crisis, preparing to live your life more productively, more realistically, more harmoniously, it comes down gaining access to the deeper mind, this mind of knowledge. And as far as our connections or our relations with other races in the universe, this knowledge is just so critically important. In fact, in the Allies briefings, they make a real emphasis about knowledge in terms of, you know, what we can do to prepare, because if we can't see the situation clearly, then having more information is not going to make a difference. You know, we're very information hungry. We want more information. But if we can't say, hey, this is an intervention, we're the native peoples, you know, we're not allowing this to happen. If we can't see it clearly and fundamentally like that, then information, more information is not going to help. But the Allies say very clearly that knowledge, this knowledge, the spiritual knowledge we have, is critically important. It is the one thing that can protect us from manipulation, from subversion. It's the one thing that can keep us clear and honest within ourselves. And I think that it's a major emphasis, the core of spiritual teaching that I do in the study of greater community spirituality. And I think it has to be an emphasis for all of us, because we have to get very sober about certain things in life, and this is one of them. We really need to be sober about this because we're the native peoples. And we have within us a knowing mind that can bottom line complex questions. You know, it's meant to do that. That's one of the ways it serves and protects and guides us.
All right. You know, while you're on that subject, Marshall, I'm thinking that Most of the abilities that contactees and abductees give to the extraterrestrials, I mean, I'm not talking technological abilities. I'm talking, well, I guess you couldn't call them, we'll call them psychic abilities for a lack of a better word. That's all stuff I think, giving time and the right teaching that we can develop on our own. Maybe even use it to help slow down contact, even change the style of the contact. I would imagine that as an extraterrestrial, if a human became a threat, especially psychically, where they could do some damage, I would think they would handle you much more, much differently, and maybe even give you some say in what happens. But what do you think, Marshall?
Well, I think that's very accurate. I mean, we're still operating in a very simple-minded manner. We need to develop a kind of core discernment, the kind of discernment that I think any adult person would use if they're walking the streets of a large city or in a part of any town that they're unfamiliar with. We have to use that kind of discernment in life. I mean, we can't just assume that, you know, it's a magic kingdom out there. And certainly the universe, being a very competitive environment, there are very powerful forces at work here, competing with each other, interacting with each other. We have to use this kind of discernment, and it's entirely spiritual to do this. This is not a fear-based way of looking at life. This is wisdom, and we may be born with divine knowledge, but we have to learn the wisdom of the world, and I think we have to learn the wisdom of the greater community now, because that's the larger environment that is going to determine our future and actually can benefit us if we can understand it correctly, if we can recognize it, if we can use this God-given power and strength to see clearly, to inform our actions, to act responsibly. And, of course, this is also the antidote to war, human conflict, greed, all the things that are really undermining the human family and leading us into further degradation. I'd like to read a little quote. This is from the fifth briefing of the first book of the Allies of Humanity. Quote, "You are far behind the visitors in your technological development, so you must rely upon knowledge. It is the greatest force in the universe, and your visitors do not use it. It is your only hope."
Well, I know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pretty sure it's about time to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Marshall Summers, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Quicken Loans knows when your mortgage payment is too big, it follows you everywhere.
Hey, guys, where are we going?
Hi, Big Mortgage.
Dad and I are going car shopping.
Not without me.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
A mortgage payment that's too big can drive every financial decision you make.
Scooch over, little man. The Big Mortgage is your dad's constant companion.
Dad, the Big Mortgage is squishing me.
I'd really like to get a bigger car.
The Big Mo says no.
Don't let your big mortgage payment push you around. Pick up the phone and let Quicken Loans show you how to lower your payment up to 33%. That's a third off your payment. Call 800-928-5199. Quicken Loans makes it fast and easy to say goodbye to your big mortgage payment.
You're not the boss of us.
R2.
R2.
Am I going to have to separate you two?
Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199 today. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. And, Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network. And if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call.
Hey, over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. so we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Hello. Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690 Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show. I hope y'all are enjoying it. I've been enjoying Marshall. He's been giving us some good information tonight. Remember, if you'd like to call in, you can use the toll-free number at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Feel free to pick up the phone and call us or join us in the Pal Talk Virtual Auditorium. Y'all know you can just put your hand up and ask from there. You know, Marshall, I'll start talking with you about the break, but where do you really want to go? I mean, alien agenda, allies, what? Go ahead.
Well, I think that one of the important things to talk about is there's some critical questions that I'm always asked. One of them is, well, you're talking about an intervention, and are there any good ETs here? And my answer to that question is there are good ETs, but they're not here interfering in human affairs, because any wise friend of humanity would not try to circumvent human authority. They want to increase human authority, responsible human authority. They would not try to take control of our world. I mean, we're seeing right now the United States is trying to take control of another nation in the Middle East, and it's a disaster. It doesn't work. And any wise nation, and any friend of humanity, any ally of humanity would know that. And so I think it creates an unambiguous situation. Also, if there was a beneficial group, extraterrestrial group in the world today, they would understand that we as human beings could not tell friend from foe. We do not have the species maturity. We do not have the experience of life in the universe. We do not have the discernment yet, which we hopefully will be able to develop over time, to be able to tell friend from foe. And the allies' briefings emphasize there are no neutral parties in this matter. We're sitting on a property of immense value and importance to other races, and we happen to be the stewards of that planet. And so it's important for us to know that we have an unambiguous situation regarding the extraterrestrial presence in the world today. We have friends, but they are not interfering. And they're not going to come and save us. They're not going to rescue us from our own self-created demise. We are going to have to strengthen ourselves, unite ourselves, empower one another, in order to pull the world through the difficult times ahead. These are going to have to be Earth-based solutions to the problems that we face. And the Allies briefings emphasize this, that no one's going to come and save you, and anyone who says they're going to come and save you is really here to take advantage of you. And worldly wisdom tells us that too. If someone came to your door saying, I'm here to solve all your problems, would you believe them? I don't think so.
I'd be asking, where's the check? You got a check for $4 or $5 million? That'll be a good start. Go ahead, Marshall.
The other thing I'd like to talk about is what people can do, because that's always, you know, an important question. I mean, I'm creating a very, you know, ominous picture, but it's a very real picture. And it's a picture that the native peoples of any world or land must face when facing intervention. But there's important things that people can do. And I'd like to read a couple of quotes from the briefings. This is from the second book of the Allies of Humanity briefings, the first briefing of the second book. Quote, to function successfully in the greater community, which is the universe, you must be self-sufficient, you must be united, and you must be very discreet. I'll read that again. To function successfully in the greater community, you must be self-sufficient, you must be united, and you must be very discreet. Now this is, unquote, this is wisdom from the universe right here. They're telling us how to be successful in our relations with other races, how to make it in this larger panorama of intelligent life.
Yeah.
So that is, as a world, you know, we need to have this kind of wisdom, understanding this wisdom, teaching or if we take our selfish, indulgent, greedy behavior out in the universe, we're not going to make it.
I agree with that. We're not going to make it.
We're just not going to make it. And that's pretty evident. I think a lot of people are beginning to feel that, you know, we may not make it. I mean, we're facing, you know, energy depletion, global warming, violent weather, pandemic illness. I mean, the list goes on and on. And we're leading ourselves into World War III between religious powers in this world. And that's a whole other subject I probably don't have time to go into this evening and how the intervention is playing into that. But clearly, you know, the battle lines are beginning to be drawn there, and it's a very unnecessary, it's a very dangerous thing.
Oh, I agree. I'm just waiting to see who's going to, where everybody's going to side up when this is all said and done here and over the next year. But I tell you what, let me grab one more quick question because I hate to leave anybody with their hand up. And I see Joe in Florida. Well, I was going to tell you to give me your first name and location, but we don't have to do that. So Joe from Florida, why don't you come up and ask Marshall your question? Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Joe. This is Joe in Florida. And my question is, do these visitors have knowledge of the future? And with this knowledge, are they trying to manipulate humans? I don't know if they can make a better decision than we can, us humans on this planet, than they could from another planet. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the question is, can they see into the future and can they make a better decision for us than we can? Well, they may understand where we're heading in terms of the depletion of our world, but it all depends on whether they're here to assist us or here to exploit us. And it's pretty evident through the Alex Vimini briefings and also, I think, through the UFO record, through the record of the evidence, that we are being exploited and we are being weakened and being prepared to be acquiescent and submissive to this power, and to also believe that this power has supernatural powers, which many people want to believe. I think there's a real desire for paternalism regarding the extraterrestrial, that they're going to take care of us into the future or guide us into the future. And I think that's a very unwise assumption to make at this point. There's certainly no basis, real basis for it. It's wishful thinking, fundamentally, and it's very blinding as a result. They may see that, you know, we could deplete our world, but it's our world. And if we want to deplete it, we'll deplete it and have to face the consequences. But if they're here to take advantage of that depletion, if they're here to actually benefit from our demise, so that the authority of this world, the sovereignty of this world that has heretofore been humanity's, is given over, then certainly we're putting ourselves in a position of extreme vulnerability and powerlessness. And I think the future that we're looking at in the next 20 years of resource decline and environmental disruption is extremely grave. And you can imagine within that an extraterrestrial presence would show up, you know, in their beautiful ships, promising salvation to a ever more desperate humanity, when in fact the intervention has been helping us to move in that direction all along. It's one of the ways that humanity could be overtaken without firing a shot, and it's also a form of display. For those of your listeners who are familiar with, you know, flyovers of military bases in this country and other countries, and military encounters with extraterrestrial craft, you can see that the intervention uses display. Even though it's a very small force, it presents itself as immensely powerful and overwhelming, and that humanity doesn't have a chance in the face of it. But that's all deception. I mean, that's really not there in reality, according to the Allies' briefings. So I think that we shouldn't assume that the extraterrestrial have valuable knowledge if their purpose is not here to serve us.
Oh, I would agree with that.
And so far, the demonstration of their behavior, the surreptitious nature of their behavior, their violation of human rights in so many different ways, is demonstrating not a benign intent for humanity, but an exploitive one. And I think that's just very fundamental. If we can't see that, if we can't come to that fundamental understanding, then we're really, I think we can't move forward until we realize that we are being played with, that we are being manipulated, that we are not being given authority or power or control over the nature of this contact or where it is leading us. So our future successful contact, I think when you go and read the Declaration of Human Sovereignty document, begins to lay down a foundation for how humanity is going to have to behave with one another and with other races. It's really more about responsibility now than becoming enlightened. We have to use our native intelligence, and we have to create a movement for ethical contact. See, I want to make this very important point. You know, my position is not to discourage contact. My position is to encourage ethical contact. The contact that is occurring now, and has been occurring particularly in the last 50 years, is not ethical contact. It will not benefit us. It has not benefited us. And it will lead us into a state of dependency, a state of acquiescence. And we're dealing with forces here that are very clever in doing this. I mean, they're much more sophisticated, you know, than our corporate marketers or our government in terms of manipulating thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. This is a very powerful skill that's used in the universe around us, particularly amongst competing races, races that compete for resources. You know, The Allies briefings, interestingly enough, really point out that war, like Star Wars, just rarely ever happens in the universe. It's more about influence at a more subtle level, because technology is pretty comparable amongst, you know, advanced nations. Technology can be copied or stolen or borrowed or purchased or whatever. It's really these mental skills that are much more important, and that's why the training in learning the way of knowledge is so valuable, because it creates an immunity for us. Whether you're a contactee or a regular citizen, it creates an immunity from this kind of persuasion and enables you to see clearly, not only regarding the extraterrestrial phenomenon, but regarding any phenomenon. And seeing clearly, or common sense, as they say, is not very common these days. So it's really important that we can see this situation clearly, because if we can't, it doesn't matter how many sightings there are, it doesn't matter how many guided messages there are, we are not going to put ourselves in a position of power and responsibility regarding the greatest event in human history.
I agree, the greatest event in history. Actually, probably the greatest event in all time when you really come right down to it. I don't know what's going to supersede meeting extraterrestrials, except for maybe meeting God. You know, really, I mean, what else is there in the universe? Once you've met them, it's pretty much, well, you know, that's something else, Marshall, too. You know, when you look at society today, and especially about the topic matter we're talking about, and you think that maybe, if you did say this, about 6 billion, 300 million of us now, so maybe about 3 billion of us even think that there's intelligent life out there, and about half of them probably believe the planet's being visited. We got a long ways to go, a long ways. Ooh. And the simple fact that we still argue over religion amazes me. I don't understand why people don't have the tolerance. I don't get it. I understand that they think, it's like any other view, they think their view is the right one and yours isn't. I totally understand that. And they may or may not be correct. But why they can't tolerate someone else and what they're doing, as long as it's not hurting them, is beyond me.
Well, that's an important question, and I feel that my role in all this, in talking about the one spirituality of humanity, humanity's preparation for life in the universe, the greater community in which we live, I mean, I'm trying to play a role, as you are, to educate people, to bring people not only into this larger sphere of life, but also to get them grounded in what's most essential and fundamental, because, you know, knowledge at the core of all religions. I mean, if you're grounded in knowledge, you may have a different view or a different path to follow, but you recognize there are many rivers that flow to the sea. That the creator of all life recognized that not everyone could follow one teacher, one teaching, one prophet. And so many religions were created over time so that everyone can have a pathway to follow. Religions both great and small. Religions both international and religions that are local. So that there are many pathways, so everyone has a chance. This is the nature of divine creation, in my view. And so, to me, the conflict between religions is a matter of manipulation, both by religious authorities, political authorities, and also, strangely enough, the intervention, which would seek to bring the most powerful nations in the world to its knees. Because the one nation in this world right now that can really confront the intervention is the United States.
Yeah, extraterrestrials. That's about it at this point.
Middle East over resources and religion that could bring us down.
Actually, at the rate religion's going, it's going to bring us down. It's just a matter of time.
Biden-conquer strategy is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the way it sits, the first nuke that's been dropped since World War II will probably be dropped in the name of some god. I hate to say that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm even willing to put money on that. Like I said earlier, I don't understand it. You know, we can't seem to get past this little thing.
It'll be dropped probably for oil, and God will be used as a justification.
That'll work, too. I don't know. You know, I think about the oil thing, but not everybody gets the whole story on the oil. The Middle East only has 50 years of oil left anyway. The Gulf's got about 200 years in it. Alaska's got at least that much in it. U.S. isn't fighting over oil. U.S. is fighting over control for the marketing enough to keep the price up, but they don't really care if we have it or not. The U.S. is starting to move away from oil, too. Now it's mandatory 25% of all vehicles on the road have to be alternative fuels. By the turn of the next century, all vehicles in the United States have to be alternative fuels other than oil fuels. We're looking to get away from it. We're just looking to control it while China is trying to use it so we can keep them from becoming the world power financially.
Have a greater community awareness. And what I'm talking about is this greater community awareness. This competition will increase, and it will lead to the decline of everyone's country. You can see it's going to be ongoing conflict, huge expenditures of energy. We're not preparing for the future. We're just living out the past, basically. And our future is going to require the humanities, go back to three things that the briefings emphasize. We must be self-sufficient, we must be united, and we must be discreet. Discreet in terms of our engagements with other races. Because we live on a planet of such immense value to others. Just like if you were an extremely rich person living around other people who weren't rich, you have to be pretty discreet about that wealth. You're going to have a lot of problems.
Yeah.
You're going to have to handle your relations with other people very, very carefully. And we live on a very rich planet, biologically rich. We take it for granted and we don't value it. But if you have a greater community understanding, you see that worlds like this are rare. And that the advanced races who are out looking for resources have already outstripped their own worlds, you can see how important it is to have self-sufficiency. Because that self-sufficiency gives you power, it gives you self-determination, it gives you choice, and it puts you in a position of determining the kind of contact that you want to have with other races in the universe. And we won't have contact with
anyone. Where are you going, Marshall? Let me ask you this right quick. Let's say, out of some weird miracle, tomorrow the planet decided to unite, basically stand up for itself and its rights. What do you think, at this point, the extraterrestrials' response would be? Would it be a positive, a negative? Would it be something we wish we wouldn't have done? I'm just curious. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I know we're getting kind of short on time. It just popped into my head, so I wanted to ask you.
That's a very good question. The briefings make it very clear that if we begin to raise our voice against the intervention will be stopped because it's completely operating on human submission, acceptance, and acquiescence. As I mentioned earlier in the show, the intervention has many critics and many representatives and few critics. And this is a very complex thing that you can read about in the briefings, but the intervention is being restrained because it's not allowed in the inter-world politics of our region to actually invade another country. You have to make it appear that the other country actually wants you to be there. It has to appear that we accept this presence and this intervention. And then it can go on according to the rules of engagement that are established within our region. And this is a part of the understanding that we, as human beings, could not possibly have until we actually go out there and engage with other races. And this is part of what is revealed in the Allies of Humanity briefings. And it gives us tremendous power and responsibility because we really have a choice in this matter. We can stop this intervention. And the other important point is there will be more interventions. We're going to have continuous attempts at intervention from here on.
Until we can stand up for ourselves, huh?
Or that cannot be trifled with. I mean, we're functioning now as irresponsible stewards of this world. We're not united. We're engaged in conflict with each other, and we're going to have to become a force to be reckoned with in the universe, or we will be taken over sooner or later by someone. And we will submit or acquiesce or give in or give up, whatever the case may be. And that cannot happen. I think we're at the time of immense decision about this, and that's why I feel it's incumbent upon me to bring this message of both warning and hope to as many people as possible, both through the Allies of Humanity briefings, through my books on greater community spirituality, through the new message that I feel that I've been given to give to humanity, because it is a message not only of warning and gravity, but also a message of hope. I mean, it's speaking to what is really possible for us, but we can't behave in the same old way. We can't take the same old positions. We're going to have to rise to this occasion. But life has taught us that the greatest moments in our lives are when we have to rise to difficult occasions, and we are facing a difficult occasion.
That's also very definitely headed in that direction. These days, and unfortunately, I mean, we're dealing with this extraterrestrial thing along with all of our ignorances, and we've just got so much stuff to learn as a species. And, you know, I always have hope, and I always do think maybe, you know, because I do see, you know, there are some things that a lot of people aren't aware about. There are 6,300,000,000 people on the planet today, and per capita, war-wise and food-wise, there's less starving people today per capita than there ever has been, and there's less people dying in war today. So the planet has congealed some. It's just we can't seem to get past just some of the little petty things. I understand resources are an important thing. I really do. And I do understand that a lot of this is important to people, but really when it comes right down to it, it should always be the people first and everything else second. And I don't think that's a lesson we're going to learn for a long time to come. America's right now the most advanced country on the planet, not in everything, but in technology we are. Socially, we're probably somewhere, you know, two-thirds of the way up. I wouldn't say we're the most advanced socially because we are kind of behind in some things. But you're just not seeing a general congealing. You're seeing what looks to be like coalitions, Marshall. Like you'll see like the United States now has its, you know, its non-allies that it's had since World War II that it considers to be part of our country. In other words, like the UK and even Canada and Australia. You could not untangle our militaries and economy if we had to. Even if we decided we hated each other tomorrow and wanted to go to war, we couldn't. Because effectively we are one nation with several different rulers, but as far as our economies go and our militaries and quite a few other things for that matter, we're one nation. And you seem to see this, like the Chinese and the Russians now are kind of congealing together, and you're starting to see this happen in other places on the planet. And it looks like what we're going to see is three or four groups form, and then either war or working towards a more united front. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's actually very accurate, and I think it is. But it's also a function of survival, because we're a very overpopulated world, and we are a world of shrinking resources, and those resources are going to become ever more valuable and contested. And we're going to have to make decisions along the way whether we're going to fight over them or whether we're going to cooperate to share them. And I think, again, this greater community awareness that I've, you know, been referring to through the show and through my conversation with you tonight, which I really appreciate, emphasizes, you know, the absolute necessity to share these resources, because we are going to have to face the universe together. And our destiny is going to be the same. No one's going to be a winner in this world if we fall into submission to a foreign power.
I hate to stop you, Marshall, but we're just about out of time, so... make sure you tell them where they can find the book, where they can find you at, where they can contact you. I hated to cut you off like that. I'd like to let you go, but I know we're almost out of time, and they would have just done it on its own.
Well, I have three websites that I invite your listeners to visit. Certainly the www.alliesofhumanity.org. In fact, we have the whole first set of briefings up free online. You can read the entire book online or download it. And that's to reach people around the world with the Allies briefings. Both books are available in bookstores everywhere. Through Amazon.com and also through bookstores. My main teaching site is www.greatercommunity.org. There you can learn about the way of knowledge and greater community spirituality. I have a third website, www.newmessage.org, which is really the message that I have for the world and for the individual. And it's a very powerful site. I just encourage your readers to take the time to visit. I welcome them.
Well, Marshall, I want to thank you for being on tonight. Man, you were a great guest. I enjoyed it. I hope everybody learned something tonight. I'll have to get with Linda to get you back scheduled again, because I know we just barely touched on anything this season. But again, I want to thank you for coming on. You were a great
pleasure, and I look forward to being back on your show.
Okay, thank you. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget Richard Boylan will be coming on. A couple of interesting things we'll be talking about there. Also, I would like everybody's comments and opinions. As usual, you can send them at icrosscox.net. Also, if you have trouble finding Marshall's sites, they're both listed on the Stardust Radio site and the www.icar1.com site. So you can find him listed there as well, so it'd be quite easy to find him. And guys, what we were talking about earlier at the beginning of the show, I would really like to know what everybody thinks about quite a few things we're moving into space with, especially the new space program. Everybody's opinion on it, I would like to know. I'm just curious to see where the United States and the world, for that matter, stands on this new program, because, you know, it's one of those things we're going to spend a couple of $1 trillion on. I just want to know what everybody thinks. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're just about out of time. Again, I want to thank Marshall for being on tonight. Don't forget next week. Richard Boylan will be on the show next week. So on that note, guys and girls, I want to thank everyone for listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. And until next week, have a great life.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in iCar's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Parkin of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination. Alexis Park Inn.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Kent Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com